Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
And good morning again, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour here. It's Jonna Spilbor. It's Carol Pesci. It is myself, a Frankenberry guy, and we're back again for another show this week. And I know you're saying to yourselves, woohoo, throwing confetti around and using those whistle things they use at New Year's time. But yes, we are back for another show, and it shall be a good one. And we're going to get some self-help today from, what is his name there, Jonna? Stephen Herz?
Yes, that's how we're pronouncing it, Steve Herz, but it could be Hertz or it could be Hairs. I guess we'll find out when Steve joins us later today. And I'm excited to talk to him because he's got a book. And again, people are getting so wonderfully creative with their book titles. And I am attracted to that like a moth to the flame. And
yes, you are.
I am. And his book is entitled Don't Take Yes for an Answer. Using authority, warmth, and energy to get exceptional results. And I am 3/4 of the way through the book. And we're going to do something today. When we talk to him, he doesn't know it yet. And you two don't know it yet. But I'm going to tell you that when we get him on here, I've created 3 alternate titles for his book. and I want him to pick the one that he thinks best suits it if he ever, you know, comes out with a new version and needs a new book title for it. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm sure he'll get a kick out of that.
Yeah. It's because it's a really, and I'll save this for when we talk to him, but it's very, I'm looking at the book as like how to change your personality to get everything that you want. And that sounds really difficult to do, but when you listen to the book or if you read the book like normal people, it's actually kind of easy. Like he sort of breaks it down. So we're going to be talking more with Steve in our next segment. Very, very interesting book.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm loving it too. I'm reading it as well. I'm really.
Yeah.
So this is what I do when we have a guest coming up. I'll download the Kindle sample.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that sample, decide whether I want the book. And as soon as I got that, I'm like, boop, need it.
Yup. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
He's a talent agent. And if you think about it, like who better to figure out what's wrong with somebody professionally than a person who works with talent for a living? Like, you know, he's got the inside scoop on that.
Well, so, and it's not necessarily what's wrong with you. And I know he's going to get into it. But we live in this culture where we can't ever offend anybody. Everybody gets a trophy. And what if what you really need to hear that could catapult your life and your career, everybody's afraid to tell you because of the way we are today, and that it's not necessarily what's wrong, but what's that tweak? What's that little thing that nobody's telling you that if you were like, have some self-awareness and have an open mind, you'd be like, ah, and he gives you example after example after example of telling people the truth without being hurtful and what it does to their career. It's really, really amazing.
Here, I'll be him. Oh, Carol, that's brilliant. That was brilliant, Carol. Let's just get it out of the way. Let's get it out of the way right now.
Okay, yes, let's do that.
I don't expect to get any brilliance out of this guy. He's going to probably be like, slow your pace down. You speak too fast. Your pitch is too high.
Every guest calls you brilliant for the last 12 freaking years.
Hey, listen there,
Frankenberry. Frankenberry, I know this would take you a month to do, but can you imagine a soundbite with every guest who's ever told Carol? That was brilliant, Carol. You are spot on, Carol. Dead nuts on. Oh my God, that's
you know what
I want for Christmas. Okay?
I actually did find a couple of those not too long ago. I just have to find out what session I put them in because I actually forgot to put them together. You know, and I just wanted to intersperse it with like the 2 times in 12 years that somebody has said, "Oh, good question, Jonna."
Or Jonna's response going, "Yeah,
exactly."
I will probably murder you if you put together a reel like that. A real self-esteem killer. No, I'm kidding. Well deserved. But Moving on, I want to talk about something fun before I talk about something not fun today. Can I just tell you guys? Can I just tell you about what I did last weekend?
Oh, is this
what you do?
Yeah, how come you didn't like approach this, by the way, from a good news and bad news perspective and ask us which one we wanted to hear first?
Oh, all right. You want me to do that? Sure. I have a fun story and a not so fun story. Which one would you like to hear first?
Fun, because you're not so fun are actually fun for us.
Yeah, I'll go with, we'll go with fun. Stick to script there, Jonna.
Fun first.
Okay, fun first. Okay, so last weekend I did something that was I would never have like ever envisioned myself doing. But our good friend to the show, Heather Hansen, who we love, she got free F-R-E-E tickets to see Barry Manilow, who was playing at Radio City Music Hall last weekend. And so she called me up and she's like, my friend can't go. I've got two tickets. I immediately thought of you. Do you want to go? And I said to myself before I responded, immediately thought of me. Like, do I walk around singing Oh Mandy? Like, what do you what about me reminded you of Barry Manilow? But I said to myself, I remember being a kid, and he was one of the Barry Manilow, Neil Sedaka. You can name all the things, all the songs that your parents played on that big clunky like record player. Like he's iconic.
Right.
So I said, and plus, did I mention free? So I said, yeah. I said, I'll go. Now, before I went, because like
did you guys park in your overpriced parking spot?
No, we did it. No, we each took our respective trains and met there. I had a great dinner first. But before the few days before the show, I was mentioning to people that I was going to go see Barry Manilow just to like gauge the reaction. So I, much to my chagrin, I was talking to a couple people at, I'm hosting at Law and Crime, and the producers, the people behind the scenes at Law and Crime, behind the camera, the lighting people, the mic people, all the people. I don't think a single one of them is over the age of 28, let's say. And as luck would have it, I have this real weird characteristic where I myself don't consider myself to be over the age of 28. Like, you know what I mean? Like, do you feel over the
years? Oh, we know. We know.
Oh, yeah. We're well aware of that.
We know.
But I don't. Like, I forget how the year I was born.
How did you catch that? I forget. Oh, no. She wasn't going to put it in a complete sentence.
Yes, exactly.
Didn't happen. The year I was born.
I can't say it. I just can't. So I got kicked in the face, figuratively, because I said to a couple people, and there I'm like, hey, because they know Heather too, because Heather works there. She's a host too. And I said, hey, guess what I'm doing this weekend? Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, what? And I said, Heather and I are going to see Barry Manilow. And I got the blankest.
I'm sure you did.
The absolute blankest stares. And I'm like, you never heard of Barry Manilow? And then one of the kids said, I think my mom might have knows him. Now, do you know what kind of burst that was to my ego that I am equated to other people's mothers?
And Jonna, keep in mind that my mother was a huge fan of Barry Manilow when I was growing up, but I ain't 28 years old.
Right.
So maybe it was the kid's grandmother. Maybe he thought it was gonna his mother. Say, yeah, his grandma.
That was probably his grandma. Now that's not gonna help you in what you're feeling about yourself right now. But yeah, that's probably the case.
If anybody had said to me, I don't know him, but my grandmother was a huge fan, you wouldn't be talking to me right now because I would be hospitalized. Once I got that reaction, I couldn't help myself. I had to like go around and ask other people to see if that was just a one-time thing.
Oh, so you wanted to be punished more.
Oh, yeah, apparently.
But you guys, I didn't think I was going to be punished more. I was like, this person must be an idiot. Let me go ask some other people.
Because it can't be me.
No,
that's right.
So I started to ask people who appeared to be slightly older, and not just at Law and Crime. Like I went to Fox, I went other places, and I would be like, hey, guess what I'm doing this weekend? Not a single person, not a single person that I took this informal survey from, and none of them knew they were part of my survey. Not a single person said, oh my God, how cool is that? All of them were like, Barry who? Who? Yes, this is the world in which we live. Now, having said that, it was so good that this man is coming again to Radio City Music Hall in October. And guess who's going to get tickets? And I'm going to pay for him this time. Me.
Wow.
Wow. Look at you. Now, here's my quick question for you. And I mentioned this before we went on the air here. How's the Barry looking these days? Does he have hair like Rod Stewart that looks kind of akin to Angela Lansbury's hair?
You know that sometimes at Halloween, you can buy one of those visors that has this big tuft of hair coming out of the top. You know what I'm talking about? Fake big tuft of hair. That is Barry Manilow's head. Like, maybe they modeled that after him. It can't be real. It's got to be a toupee. But that's the hair that he was sporting in concert. But I got to tell you something else. He's 81.
Whoa. See, grandma.
81.
Yeah, definitely.
And he is spry. He moved all over the stage. He had conversations with the audience totally, I mean, loose, like he's with it. He is completely with it. He's in good shape. Even at one point, this was like embarrassingly funny. He was, I forget what song it was, but he did, like, you know how Michael Jackson used to thrust his hips and put his hand kind of, you know, on his, you know, right? So Barry Manilow mimics that, and he says, I'm still a sex machine. He's 81, God. Which made it hilarious.
Oh my God.
Oh, man. Barry Manilow has always been the consummate performer. And even when I was a kid and I knew that my mother was a big fan, because of my mother being a big fan, I would pay more attention. And there were some Barry Manilow tunes that I was a huge fan of, too. So, you know, I'm not embarrassed by any of that.
And probably still, like, Lola, I could sing that song all day long. That's all my, that's probably the only Barry Manilow song in my, like, playlist. But that's an iconic.
Copacabana.
Yeah, Copacabana.
Right. Copacabana,
right. I'm calling it Lola. But I love that song. It's timeless. So, but it was so surprisingly good that I am no longer embarrassed that I went. And the only person who knew more of the words to all the songs than I did was Heather. It was a really good time. So, okay, now moving on to the not fun thing.
Which is hopefully fun for us, but go ahead.
Right, exactly.
Well, you know, I seek your opinions on a lot of things, in case you haven't noticed lately. Like, you know, when we create these informal segments
I thought we were calling this segment Is Jonna an A-hole? Wasn't that one of your ideas?
I think that was your idea. mine was justifiable homicide.
Oh,
right. And that was on the heels of a PO'd PSA or a PO'd SA. Yeah.
PO'd SA, right.
That's right.
Yeah. Kind of morphed into justifiable homicide, which morphed into Carol's version. So it's in that realm. And I guess today we can call it, is it me? All right. Now, look, I know. People are going to think it's minor. But again, it seems like everybody has a little bit of a hair trigger lately, myself included. And certain things, just when they rub me the wrong way, they rub me the wrong way. And this rubbed me the wrong way. Now, let's talk garbage.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Now, Frankenberry, is your new abode, is it a single family home or is it an apartment? What is your new abode?
No, it's a two bedroom apartment in a complex.
Okay. How do you dispose of your garbage? You know, your kitchen garbage.
Okay. Well, to let you know, I dispose of my garbage in one of two bins that are just down at the end of the parking lot. And one of them's for garbage and one of them's for recyclables, which I was glad they had one for recyclables. And that's what I do. So I put them in the back of my car if they're heavy, and I just drive them down there, or I leave them there, and then I drop them off on my way home.
Okay. So you won't be able to relate to this. Curly, how do you dispose of your garbage?
I have a garbage can and a recycle can that I put my stuff in my garage. And then once a week, I roll it down the end of my street.
Aha. Okay. Now you're talking my language. All right. Now, have you ever forgotten? Curly, to roll your garbage cans to the end of your driveway on the designated garbage pickup day.
Rarely, but yes.
What do you do when that happens?
I either wait till the next week if there's room in the can, and if there isn't, I will put it in my car and go down to the transfer station and get rid of it.
Ooh, that's hardcore. Okay.
Jonna ain't going there.
No. Okay. So here's what happened. I know a lot of people leave their garbage cans close to the house during the week because it just makes it so much easier to take your kitchen garbage out and you put in your garbage can and that's it.
Well, aren't yours just up at the end of the driveway all the time in their little enclosure?
Do I have a little garbage?
Yes, you have a garbage enclosure. Yes, Jonna.
Gotcha. He's not. You're not going to get him to say it.
It's never going to happen.
It's not an enclosure. I actually when I got my driveway paved, they gave me a little sidewalk off to the side of my driveway at the end of my driveway where my garbage cans live. And it literally, you guys, is 3 feet from the actual end of the driveway. That's it. It's like 3 feet from the end of the driveway. And I don't mind having to walk up there occasionally during the week to dispose of my garbage and my recycling. All right. So I never, ever, ever, never forget to put the garbage cans at the end of the driveway for obvious reasons. But it just so happens that this week I forgot. I got a lot going on. I totally forgot. And I didn't remember until I heard the din of the garbage trucks rolling past my house in the morning when I had no makeup on, in my robe, wet hair, getting ready for the office. So I couldn't even run out there like a crazy person and go, hey, come back, right? You know me, because if I got to go to the end of my driveway, I need full hair, I need full makeup.
Yes.
And heels.
Yes, right. we're aware of that.
You know that. So I said to myself, okay, me being the ever optimist that I am, I said, you know what? I bet you, since my cans are 3 feet from where they are when I remember to put them at the end of the driveway, I bet you these nice garbage pickup people looked at that and said, maybe she's out of town. Maybe she's trapped under something heavy and can't get to the end of the driveway. we're gonna do her a solid. Been a long time customer. We're just going to go ahead and empty these cans for her, and then we'll just leave them 3 feet away from where we got them at the end of the driveway. I honestly had that conversation with myself. Like, this is what's going to happen. This is what they're going to do. Well, wouldn't you know it? What do you think they did?
They didn't touch them.
They didn't touch them. They didn't move them an inch. They didn't leave me a note. They didn't even nothing. They right where they were. Right where they were. Now,
you know, Jonna, that they don't really ever get out of the trucks anymore these days. You know that, right? They have to be able to be picked up by that, you know, thingy on the side of the truck that lifts it and dumps it in the back.
I understand that. But in my neighborhood, there's always somebody hanging off the back who gets off the dang truck. So now I'm not going to call them because I think they probably charge you if they have to come back, if you were stupid enough to forget your garbage cans 3 feet from where you normally put them. But do you not think, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that going the extra mile, it wouldn't even be going an extra mile for them to think to do that. Now, I know it's my fault and I know it's my responsibility, but going the extra 3 feet, not an extra mile, to make a customer feel appreciated in this day and age, wouldn't that go?
What are you hitting?
I'm hitting the pad on which I've written the three alternate titles for our guest book. Oh. Am I right or am I right? Like, why don't we go the extra quarter mile in this day and age for customers and people?
You did say
I
that
think
you
some
know
people
it's your
do, but you're
your responsibility, right?
What'd you say, Frankenberry?
I said, you did already admit that it was your fault and your responsibility, right?
I object. I object. Sit down. Carol, what were you going to say to me? Carol,
I was going to say that I think people do go the extra mile, but this is a garbage pickup. I think the extra mile is more common when it's one-on-one interaction. They don't know you. They just know your cans.
Put on bump. She's here all week. Tip your waitstaff.
Oh, boy. Yes, they're quite familiar with my cans.
Yes, yes. Or maybe they hung, around for a little bit, hoping you would forget all the makeup and everything else and come running up the driveway in your nightgown or your bathrobe.
I would have been a sight. Wet hair, no bra, bathrobe, no makeup. Oh, God, no. You know what? If I had done that, they never would have picked up my cans again. Like, nope. No,
that's viral TikTok gold every week right there.
Yeah. So they didn't do it. And now it just so happens, like, I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to be shoving everything I can in those cans because now I'm mad. But I just think if you are out there and you agree that people are not going the extra mile, I'm here to tell you, go the extra mile. Like, what would that have hurt? What would it have hurt?
I mean, sorry. You're just making me laugh. You're making me laugh. Yeah. You're making me laugh because basically it's like, hey, listen, I forgot. How come you didn't back me up? Right.
Right. How right? come you didn't have my back?
Yeah.
Garbage company.
That's because they didn't take yes for an answer. That's why.
Oh,
I was waiting.
She's good. Honest lady's good. She's very good.
No, today she's not good.
I'm brilliant.
She just stuck it right.
Yes, you are. I did kind of stick it right in there.
She stuck it right
that
in.
That would have made a whole lot of sense. That's all right.
That's okay, because we do have to get ready for our guest, who I am very excited to talk to. Steve Herz, that's how we're pronouncing his name. He's a talented talent agent, and he is the author of Don't Take Yes for an Answer, Using Authority, Warmth, and Energy to Get Exceptional Results. When we come right back.
All right, that sounds good. Our guest is on the way. You've got Jonna Spilborg, you have Carol Pesci, and myself, Frankenberry, and this is Happy Hour, and we will be right back.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back, everyone, to Happy Hour here. Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, myself, Frankenberry, and segment number two is where we get to our guest for the morning, and we have Steve Herz with us today.
Yeah, Steve Herz is a pretty big deal, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about him before we launch into our chat about his latest book. So Steve Herz is the president and founding partner of IF Management, and he's one of the top talent agents in the country. And he also believes that anything is possible. And sidebar, I did not know he was a talent agent until I picked up his book. And then it was like serendipity times 10. He's also a lawyer and a former public defender who eventually traded criminals for athletes. I made that part up, Steve, so don't get mad. That was he traded criminals for athletes and artists and eventually joined forces with Geller Media Management before starting IF Enterprises, which later became IF Management. As president of IF Management, Steve has been a frequent contributor to CNBC, CNN, and Court TV. See, we're like living parallel lives, kind of. And he has rubbed elbows with a lot of famous artists and athletes like Jason Williams, Mary Albert, Latrell Sprewell, etc. In a business where you have to, quote, swim with the sharks, it's important that Steve literally has done that behind his desk and in the ocean. Today, we are talking with Steve about his book, Don't Take Yes for an Answer, Using Authority, Warmth, and Energy to Get Exceptional Results. It's a self-empowerment guide to achieving your fullest professional and personal potential. Steve Herz, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Really, that's quite an introduction. My mother would be really happy.
Well, you were. I think I told you when I reached out to you, I was attracted to the name, the title of your book, which often hooks me in. And then I do a little stalking and a little research, and I was like, oh my God, I'm actually surprised that we don't have, I would be surprised that we didn't have some similar friends like Tony Burton, Mark Turner, you might know.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. I know those guys. Good guys.
And also, this is so funny. You had mentioned, I'm up to chapter 8 in the book, which I'm simultaneously loving. And it, like I said, is making me nervous. But you did improv. And so did my much younger boyfriend. And I thought the two of you might actually know each other, but I don't think you do, because that was around the same time. So anyway, let's talk about you and the book. Now, Here's from your website. You explain the book as helping people with professional growth and teaching you how to embrace the hard truths and critical feedback to escape mediocrity and break away from the pack.
That's a perfect description.
I know. But basically what you're saying, Stephen, what the book is about is screw the positive feedback.
Well, I don't necessarily say you have to screw the positive feedback. I just think you can't make it the entirety of the feedback. And you should definitely seek, you know, constructive feedback. And I think too many people either don't want to hear it or can't hear it or won't listen to it. So that's problematic for everybody, myself included.
Yeah, it is, because so many people, I mean, I think it's human nature, right, to thrive on compliments, for lack of a better word, or, you know, to know that you are good at what you do or to feel good about yourself. And sometimes in order to get, you kind of put it in the book, like to go from good to great, you have to really embrace some of the constructive criticism, for lack of a better word. And you, I'm doing exactly what you say not to do in the book. Like I'm using weird words, but you embrace, this, this acronym AWE, AWE. So let's talk to our listeners. What is AWE in the book?
So it stands for A, authority, W, warmth, and E, energy. And essentially it's really about how you can connect with people, make them like you and make them trust you. And it's not trying to be manipulative. It's trying to be sincere. And so if people don't perceive you to have authority, like you might be an expert at your field, whether that – I always like to use dentistry because it just seems like something people can relate to. If you knew you needed to get a root canal, but you went to a dentist and he hemmed and hawed and told you all the 47 different options of what you could do, and then you went to the next dentist and he said – you need a root canal. I do this 50 times a day. It's going to be great. We're going to put you in the chair and you're going to be fine by tomorrow. That's authority. That's giving me a sense that I know what I'm doing and I'm handling this. And in a business context, that's often what the customer wants. And so that's the A piece of authority. And a lot of that comes down to your voice, the way you communicate, the pace in which you talk, your eye contact, your body language. And then the warmth is the ability to connect with someone, to make someone feel like you actually care about them. If you get the feeling that the person doesn't care about you, you don't want to be in a relationship with them, whether that's a colleague at work or a potential customer or anybody. And then the E piece is energy. It's really just about the dynamic that we create with another person. And do I make you feel depleted or energized? And these are the kinds of things that I've been observing about people for so many years and noticing why this person is soaring in life and this person isn't, even though they might both be very smart and both might work just as hard as the other. But one has that awe factor and the other one doesn't. And that's why I wanted to, you know, write the book and teach this.
Which is so, I couldn't agree more with those characteristics and how important they are. But I think what makes me nervous, for lack of a better word, about the book is this to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking about maybe fundamental changes to one's personality, right? Because I know, like people that I know who say lack energy, I will avoid them at all costs instead of approaching them to say, you know what, sometimes when you're talking to me on the phone and you sound like Eeyore and everything is doom and gloom, I don't want to talk to you on the phone anymore. So whose role is it? Who should be the one to give the constructive criticism?
I actually, with all due respect, I would challenge the premise of your question, which is that I don't think anybody should. The name of my book, as you know, is called Don't Take Yes for an Answer. I would say the most important word in that sentence is take. It's up to you to decide whether you're going to take it or not. And I don't presume to give anybody feedback unless they ask for it first. So I'm not pretending that this book is going to solve everybody's problems, because ultimately so many people don't take personal agency and equity in their own lives. And that's not who this book is written for. It's written for someone who actually is probably, like you say, doing good, wants to do great. and really is invested in their own life and is willing to ask for that feedback to get better. And so, but it all has to start with them. I would never presume to give anyone feedback unless they ask me. That's a lesson I've learned over the last, you know, probably 20 years.
And you're so this is far more about self-reflection, not how can I see weaknesses and how some of the people on my team perhaps are presenting themselves and how can I go. But this is all about ourselves, how we can show up better with more self-awareness.
Well, yeah, yes. And look, if you came to me and said, I want to improve X or Y, then it can be prescriptive. And,
sure.
And look, you can potentially, you know, we have a culture in our company where it's a 360 degree feedback for real, including myself. So you have that culture built in, but you have to instill that first. And it has to be a lot of trust and safety and
right.
People have to feel like, so what, but once you have that, it can be both self-reflective and externally reflective. And one of the things that I know you've read most of the book, is I don't think that the mirror is enough for people, because I don't think self-awareness is going to solve your problem. It has to be something that's going to trigger you in the moment to realize, hey, I'm not communicating with energy. And now I have that momentary, you know, kind of light bulb comes off. Because if it happens after the fact, it's too late. It has to be self-aware, but not self-conscious, if that makes sense.
But sometimes it takes getting figuratively punched in the face for you to want that awareness, right? Like, you have to be suffering. Something has to be bothering you in order to have the self-reflection. Although,
it has to be a combination. It has to be a combination of, to your point, it has to be suffering, bothering you, and a recognition that I have the capacity to make this better with things that are in my own control. It can't just be about, oh, the world stinks, I've gotten a bad rap, I've gotten dealt a bad hand, my boss is awful. You know, those things may be true, but I also have control over what I can control, and I'm going to implement A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And if you do, then you're on your way.
Steve, can I back this up for just a little bit, to a little bit of the bigger picture of what we're talking about? And you talk about three different factors that have gotten us to the point where we're so overly politically correct and careful in what we say to people that they're not hearing what could possibly be that tweak. And it doesn't mean like you are an awful, you're a hot mess. No, you're doing this right, you're doing this right, you're doing this right. Why aren't you as far along in your career or in your business as you want to be? Well, guess what? Here's what nobody's telling you. And you're not saying it with vindictiveness. In fact, Gary Vee in his book 12 and a half, his half is candor, kind candor. But we've come so far, we're so politically correct, we're so cautious, nobody can ever be offended, that all of us, none of us are getting that little bit of advice that if we're open to it, that could be like, wow. And you give example after example after example of that little tweak that made a massive difference with people.
Little tweaks.
Right. You know, look, I think you guys are right. But it's still, whatever happens in society about political correctness, whatever you might want to say, we still have the ability to seek out mentors and coaches and feedback, even amongst friends. And that's what I'm trying to say to people. Part of, look, again, there's a lot of elements to success in this world. There's an element of luck. There's an element of intelligence. There's an element of hard work. And then you have these three qualities that I think are also overlooked in the all qualities of likability and trust. And in those, I think we really don't have an underpinning from schooling as to how we get better at these things. And so I think that's sort of the gaping hole in the marketplace of why people become successful to a certain extent and others don't.
See, then that's a key point, because as you speak, I'm wondering, how would you be able to pinpoint, let's say somebody's doing some self-reflection and they say, all right, but I think I'm, I think I have warmth and I think I have energy and I already think I have authority. So how do I figure out for myself which one of these things or more that I'm lacking so that I can then take the steps to fix it? I think it's hard for someone to figure that out without external feedback. Or am I just...
No, you're 100% right. I think it is impossible. And one of my favorite personal stories is I was writing this book and my wife pointed out to me, that for a guy who's writing a book on authority, warmth, and energy, I had a really bad habit of folding my arms in front of people and not making direct, body contact. And so I started, whenever I'd go to a party or a cocktail party, whatever it would be, or some event, I immediately started noticing who in the room had their arms folded. And that would be an immediate red light for me, unfold your arms. And now, we're talking about 6 years later now from when I started doing this, I can't fold my arms anymore without noticing that I'm folding my arms.
Oh, yeah.
And so it had a tremendous benefit to my body language.
This is something you talk about in your book as well, is it could start with that awareness of looking at what other people are doing that negatively affects your perception of their authority, of their warmth, of the positive qualities, and be open to ask yourself, is that something I'm doing or not doing? And one great example you gave in your book was the person, I think it was somebody on your team, who used the word like constantly. And yeah, you pointed it out to them, and they said they went out. You want to share the rest of the story? They went out and they listened for that. Yeah. Tell us what happened.
Right. Well, what happened was he's really doing well at my company now, this young guy. And he had said, after a few months of being there, he said, how am I doing? And I said, oh, you're doing great. You're going to get promoted. You're going to become a junior agent. He says, I don't really want to hear that from you. this is a 23-year-old kid. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I kind of know how you are. I know the book you're writing. I know your mindset. It's nice of you to say that. But what would you change about me if you could? Like, what do you think I could do better? And I was very impressed with that. Remember, this is a 23-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I said, well, now that you asked, I think you're a great kid. You work hard, et cetera. And I've noticed you say the word like almost every sentence. So we sat down, we talked about it. And then he came back to me a few weeks later and he said, how am I doing? And I said, you're doing terribly. You haven't improved at all. And I said, let me give you a little bit of advice. Go home this weekend and just have fun with your family. It was a long holiday weekend. And don't even think about the word like. Say whatever you want. Don't be self-conscious. But notice all of your friends and family saying the word like. I think that'll help you. And he did that. And he came back the next week and he said, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is you'll never hear me say the word like again. The bad news is I hate all my friends because that's all they say. So to this
day, it's funny and it's true.
Yeah.
To his credit, 6 years later, I haven't heard him say the word like once, and he will make fun of me sometimes for saying the word like.
Oh, that's
great. And I think that's just a small little sample of if somebody were to point out to you, for example, that your voice is too high, just hypothetically, and then you went to go hear someone speak, you might notice that person's voice is too high. It might annoy you. And then just subconsciously, you might lower your voice. I actually think this kind of stuff works like magic, because even in sports, if you want to learn how to hit a tennis ball, you can go take a tennis lesson and do all these things. But one of the things is if you just watch a good player play and you imitate him, your body will kind of do it for you. And I think that's the same thing with good communication.
And that's why when I describe your book and how much I'm loving it, I also add, and it makes me nervous, because this really requires you to be self-aware
and humble
and really pay attention, right, to what you do and how you do it, which is, it does take a little bit of practice. I'll tell you a really short story, which is kind of related. My father, so I do a lot of TV commentary, and my father has said to me numerous times, and very recently too, and even though I've been doing it a long time, he's like, listen, he'll say, you know, I loved that show that you did with so-and-so, but you said the words, I think, before you made point XYZ, and you should never say, I think, nobody cares what you think, stop saying, I think, which but I agree with him. I'm like, you're right. Nobody does care what I think. But now what happens is I'm so conscious of trying not to say I think that I still say it on the air. But after I say it, then I cringe inside. And then it kind of affects what I say next because I'm like, oh, I did it again. Dagnam it. So you got to really practice, I guess, to make it a part of you is what I, right? I
mean, you're right. But here's what you have to practice is when you're talking to other people. So I think that you should stop thinking so much about it, I think. And I'm doing that on purpose right now because I want you to notice other people saying, I think. Mm-hmm. And what's funny about this is that somebody gave me very similar advice about the way I write. And they said to me, never say I think in writing because your opinion is spoken for. That's what your opinion is. And so just go easy on yourself. You just heard about this recently from your father. And when you start noticing other people doing it, I guarantee this goes away within the matter of a couple months.
Oh, I love it. And I love
it. You're gonna cringe from other people.
Yeah. And I love criticizing and judging other people. I'm very judging. This is gonna be fun for me.
That's the beauty of my book. It makes you feel a sense of superiority over everybody.
Oh my gosh.
No.
And that's something you say as well, that we can see flaws in others in a second, clear as day, and a little more challenging with ourselves.
It's very challenging. And look, you have to realize nobody's perfect. Some people are born with the ability to run faster or do other things. Some people have great energy. Some people have great warmth. All that I think you should try to do is be better at these things. And if that's what you're doing, that's a win. That's a big win for a lot of people.
Steve, can I just add one point here? It's a little bit of a sidebar, but it really struck me where like the percent of what we say, how we say it, how we present ourselves, and how we're ultimately as a whole communicating. And you mentioned about the power of silence at times. And I have to tell you, I used to have this boss years ago, president of the company, that was a pro at that. You would walk into his office, you would be having a discussion about something, he would answer, and he would just lean back and say nothing. And I have to tell you, those moments of nothing were some of the most powerful moments in my communications with him. I think we forget that.
You're right. Now, and also listening is active listening is a tremendous skill. I mean, you can listen to somebody and also carry on a conversation with them. For example, you're talking and I'm listening, or vice versa. And not only am I listening, I'm nodding at you. And you know, I'm agreeing with you. I'm basically talking back to you without talking, but you're right. Feeling so good because I'm listening to you.
You're present. You're very present with whoever's with you and speaking. That's a gift. I tried to be very, very diligent about that because it's a pet peeve of mine when somebody speaks over me or finishes my sentence before I'm done. And I really try to be good, other than Jana. I will cut her off. I don't like what she's saying.
We're not live anymore. Steve, I know we have to wrap up soon, but I can't. This book is really, this is an
excellent,
one of a kind book. Like we do a lot. We've interviewed a lot of authors. This book takes an entirely different approach. And before we wrap up and have people figure out how they can follow you and stalk you like I'm doing, I just wanted to offer a couple of three different book titles that I thought while I'm enjoying this book, in case you ever want to, you know, freshen it up. Are you ready? You can tell me which one you like best, okay?
Sure.
Okay.
He sounds enthused about this
game. Yes, he does. He's very excited. Keep going, Jonna.
The book is called Don't Take Yes for an Answer, Using Authority, Warmth, and Energy to Get Exceptional Results. Okay, so I've renamed it. Your potential future books could be 1, How to Get Better at Being You. I like that, right? That's a pretty good title. Or 2, I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change. Or,
that's a good one.
or 3, my personal favorite, It's Me, Hi, I'm the Problem, It's Me. Which one do you think better?
I vote for his current title.
I think of the three, I would choose the first one.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
I mean, look, it's funny. I'll be honest. I had a big fight with my publisher about the title. They wanted to call it The Awe Method. And, you know, maybe they were right. I don't know. But
no,
I wanted to call it Don't Take Yes for an Answer, because none of this is possible unless you have what I call in the book, you know, this aggressive humility. If you don't really want to get better all the time, you can't do it.
I think your title's perfect.
Thank you.
Everybody, the book is available on Amazon. But I know you're a talent agent, so you probably only want to hear from talented people.
Exactly.
But if anybody did want to stalk you and follow you, what's your preferred social media? Where can they go to find and follow you? Is it Instagram? Is it Facebook?
Yeah, I think it's on Instagram. That's probably the best one.
And what is it? What's your Instagram?
I'm just Steve Hurst on Instagram. I'm sorry. It's Steve Hurst 66, the year of my birth.
Oh.
STEVERZ 66.
That's a pretty good year. We've been talking with Steve Hirth. He's a talented talent agent and author of Don't Take Yes for an Answer, Using Authority, Warmth, and Energy to Get Exceptional Results. Steve Hirth, thank you so much for sharing your time and talent with us today on the show.
Thank you, guys. This was great. Really appreciated it.
Thank you, Steve. Can't wait to read the rest of the book. I'm loving it.
Yes, thank you very much, Steve. And you're listening to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Fesci and myself. And we are not done yet. Segment number 3 is on the way. So please stick around and we'll talk to you then.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour here. Jonna Spilbore, Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello, Mary.
Well, it was nice to talk to Steve Hirth there. He had quite a lot to say. And as the two of you both agreed at the end of the interview, he offers something different in the self-help world these days.
Yeah, he truly does. You got to really, if you have the guts to look at yourself and realize that you are not perfect, and you can look at these three areas. He boils it down to three areas: authority, warmth, and energy, right? So if you're saying to yourself, I'm not perfect and I want to figure out how to get better, just look at those three areas and pick one to improve. He actually has had people have life-changing results from
essentially a tweak. Like one, they could be, and he gives so many examples of somebody who's intelligent. They know what they're doing. They're diligent. They're dedicated. They have all these good qualities. Mm-hmm. And then there's one, why am I not further along? Why am I watching other people around me getting the promotion, having the success? And it could be that one thing that nobody's telling you that you need to hear, such as that person on his team, that example that uses the word used to use the word all the time. So it could be that one little tweak and everything changes.
And if you can't figure it out yourself, then you should ask somebody you trust for some feedback. Like people ask him he studies talent for a living. He produces talent for a living. Like, or ask your boss, ask your friend. Don't so much. I think your parents are going to be a little bit biased, but don't be afraid.
Well, not your father.
Yeah, I know. He's in class by himself.
And I've done that before with some of my projects or my book covers, or when I'm asking someone, I'm like, you're not helping me if you're not honest. I'm asking for a reason and I want you to tell me the truth. Right. And you got to be open to that.
Exactly. Does my butt look fat in these jeans? You got to be willing to hear, yeah, it kind of does. It ain't the jeans.
And you also have to be willing to not hear anything, because nobody is answering that question. Well, thank you again, especially not a guy. Well, again, thank you to Steve Hirth for joining us this morning, and for Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci and this guy named Frankenberry. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be back again next week, same time, right here. So please join us again then.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.